Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast, and a big show for you guys today as the Botch Guy returns and we discuss the draft part one as well as everything else that happened on SmackDown. This is a really fun one, including, we get into some rants about the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. So let's get everything started right after this. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Alrighty guys, let's get to your WWE SmackDown Draft Night Part 1 review with the Botch Guy. We're going to get everything going in just a minute. But first, I want to thank you guys for listening. That's always number one. Number two, check out the Botch Guy's channel. I mean, this guy is just, he's skyrocketing in YouTube. Check him out. Really worth your viewing time. Doesn't create very long videos, so if you have a very short attention span, this is the YouTube channel for you. If you love wrestling and you don't have a big attention span, long attention span, this fits in perfectly. And he's very energetic, great guy, fun to talk to. I can't say enough. So check him out. And he joins us on the show in just a couple of minutes to discuss everything that happened on SmackDown. And of course, with the draft that WWE did, at least part one of their draft, which will conclude on Monday Night Raw. So again, thank you guys for listening. And we will be, just so you know, the schedule back on Sunday night. I am moving tomorrow. It is really late. It's actually 1 in the morning right now. I have to be up at like 6 a.m. So I'm going to get a good 4 hours of sleep. And then, of course, press on and do all my moving and be back Sunday night from my new location and give you guys a week in review. So that'll be on Sunday. And then on Monday or Tuesday will be Raw Review. And it's pretty much the same schedule the rest of that week. So I don't anticipate any interruption in service, so to speak. So guys, we're going to get to a quick voicemail. We're going to respond to it. And then we're going to get into your review for SmackDown. So let's take a listen and get the show on the road.
Hello, Matt. How are you? This is Chevron from Israel, and today I want to talk to you about a little bit about the importance of a brand. I know that the past few podcasts you said that brand doesn't matter because everyone is fighting everyone. But there were days, especially in the ruthless aggression era, that brand doesn't matter. I remember that how much I loved SmackDown in the ruthless aggression era. It was the first home of John Cena. It was a great place for Christian. It was a great place for Edge, for The Undertaker. And I think that there was days that the brand meant something. Now, I think that, like all the other things that the WWE is doing, there is no logic in the brand because I just think it's not important enough. I kind of have a feeling that WWE is thinking on their fans that they are just don't smart enough or don't take care enough, and if they were doing any kind of changes in what they are doing, so the fans won't care about it. But guess what, WWE? The fans are care about it. And they care that there are no differences between the brands, and they are care that Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown became pretty much the same thing. And it really, really makes me not like the current product of WWE. Yeah, that's it. I would like if you would speak a little bit more about the days when there was a real difference between SmackDown and Raw, and now, well, it just looked the same thing, the same program. Thanks. See you later. Bye.
Hey, Sharon. Thanks so much for calling back. It's been a while. I'm glad to hear from you again. It sounds like you're doing well. Yeah, the whole brand split deal, I mean, you're going to hear a whole lot about it with the Botch Guy and myself in just a couple of minutes, but I think the fact that WWE not only doesn't adhere to their own rules about a brand split, meaning you can't go just show up on the other person's show, there has to be some rule that, you know, like quarter of the invitational, whatever, of which they didn't even stick to that. But beyond the fact that people just come and go as they please, where WWE doesn't explain it, or there's a trade that happens that, you know, we don't know how it happens or why it happens or whatever. But beyond that, which is a huge flaw in and of itself, is that you have, like you said, both brands feel the same. They're produced the same. They have the same set. It's just a flip of color. You go from blue to red or red to blue. It's the same exact thing. And don't worry, like I said, with Survivor Series coming up next month, all of the stars on both brands will suddenly have a strong, strong connection with that color that they got drafted to. Suddenly, they will protect it like it's their firstborn child, because it's Survivor Series and we have to fight for our brand. It's going to be absolute nonsense. So get ready for that. But yeah, the shows feel the same. There's no distinction between them other than colors. That's it. That's it. And yes, the faces change. But in terms of production, it's the same show, just a different color. I totally agree. And it does hurt the whole, well, I'm drafted to Raw or SmackDown. One's not better than the other, right? One's on Fox, one's on USA. We're in the same building. You just put on a different color shirt. That's it. I'm with you. So thanks so much, Sharon. And I hope you're doing well. And please call back soon. Alrighty, guys. Well, before we get going here, follow us on Twitter at @wrestling_audio. That's @wrestling_audio. You can also email the show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget that you can also call the show. You can call us and leave a voicemail at 518-952-0247. That you can leave voicemail if you'd like to chime in about your thoughts about the draft or anything else going on in WWE. You have 3 minutes. So those of you that think you're going to do a long form audio, the voicemail will cut you off at 3 minutes. So try to be concise with your rant or your question or your comments, just so you don't get cut off. Alrighty. So check us out also on YouTube at youtube.com/thewwepodcast. Instagram, you guys all know it. So alrighty, let's just get to it. Let's just jump to the Botch Guy and myself discussing the WWE draft night one. So I will talk to everyone on Sunday night. Alrighty, guys, you know who this guy is. You've heard him before, or maybe you're new to the show. Either way, you should know who he is. He is the Botch Guy. He has an awesome YouTube channel where he talks about various things that happen on Raw or SmackDown or NXT and just makes it really enjoyable to watch. And covers different moments in very short order in an entertaining, energetic way. And it's really good to have you back to talk about the draft and SmackDown that just concluded. How you doing?
Man, that's a hell of a plug, man. I appreciate that quite dearly. How's it going, guys? I am the Botch Guy. I do a YouTube channel covering a lot of different topics in the WWE. But I mostly focus on like comedy and parodies and stuff like that. So definitely check me out if you want. But it's a pleasure to be with you, Matt. Always a pleasure doing any sort of spots with you and talking SmackDown. Tonight's going to be a hell of a show.
There's a lot to talk about, right? Like there is so much that happened. It felt like WWE changed course here. It felt like they did some big things. There were certainly a couple of botches, no, I guess pun intended, with the pop-up powerbomb, and we can get to that later. But I guess what are the big takeaways from you? What are the one or two big things that happened on SmackDown in your eyes?
Well, I have there's so much to talk about. Let me just get some of the higher hype stuff, like the whole breakup with the New Day, or I guess the split up with the New Day. I think that was kind of interesting how they did it. Of course, Lars Sullivan coming back. I thought that was completely out of nowhere. You know, some of the matches I thought were pretty good overall, and some of the storylines were pretty decent overall too. Honestly, I quite enjoyed the show overall, and obviously the big thing everybody wants to talk about is the actual draft, who's going where, how it's going to shake up with everything. What did you think, Matt?
Yeah, so agreed. I mean, there's a lot that happened match-wise and storyline-wise, but the big thing that happened here, the entire show was built around the draft. And I like the way that they did it this year. I'm glad they didn't do war rooms and silly stuff like that where they had Fox executives and USA executives pretending to be super excited about people they have no idea about. So I was glad to see no war rooms. It was just Stephanie McMahon coming back and coming out on the podium, and that's fine with me. And I think the biggest news coming out of this, maybe Seth Rollins going to SmackDown, which I have been really advocating for. And I'm loving the fact he's on SmackDown. And I said to myself, oh my God, he's finally away from the Mysterios. And then who gets drafted to SmackDown? But Dominic and Rey. But I think for Seth, this will be a really good thing. He can no longer call himself the Monday Night Messiah, so we'll have to see what he does.
So what do you – so because, when I was watching the draft, I like the old school drafts. I mean, 10 years back when, you had, the Undertaker sitting in with the crowd, and they're all reacting to who's going to Raw and who's going to SmackDown. I love that because it's just such natural storytelling, right? It kind of reminds me of, the football drafts in NBA, NHL, and all that stuff, and I quite like that. This year was an improvement over last year for sure, no doubt in my mind. I didn't like the whole executive office stuff. I was kind of down to earth simple. But again, I did like the old school way. As for Seth Rollins himself, man, I'm so happy just to see him have a new prominent role over here. Because, Seth Rollins' character has changed so drastically over the years. He went from the laughing gimmick to everybody hates him gimmick. And then he was kind of confused gimmick for going on there for a little while with the whole Becky stuff. And all of a sudden he's the biggest face, and then he turns heel again. And it's just Seth Rollins, the Monday Night Messiah. And it's honestly confusing. But now the fact that he's going away from the, the Mysterios, not really, because they got drafted over to SmackDown. Honestly, it's pretty exciting. But at the same time, I will say, I guess you're not a big fan of the whole Mysterio storyline. Me personally, I don't really mind it, man. What is it about that you don't like about it?
The length. I mean, it's the simple – the length. I mean, I loved it. I thought it overachieved many months ago. But I think it's just time. And now they're bringing in Aaliyah, and it's just getting bizarre. But I did like the Murphy babyface turn. That was a nice touch. It got me interested in what Murphy's going to do against Seth. I did like that. I don't care about the Mysterio family and their really, really poor acting. And I just think that – when you have Mysterio and Dominic get drafted, the first thing they talk about is not necessarily what they're going to do, maybe challenge for the tag titles or turn over a new leaf. They start talking about, well, Seth Rollins can run for his past, but, his past, we'll catch up with Seth Rollins. It's like, no, can we please escape this? It's just, after the eye for an eye, after match after match with Dominic and Seth inside of a steel cage, all this stuff, I'm just done with the story. It's just time for it to go away. It wasn't a bad storyline. I enjoyed it for the most part. It's just time for it to go.
Well, honestly, at the beginning when Seth Rollins was doing all the eye stuff and all that stuff, it was fine. I enjoyed it. I liked the progression of the storylines using Dominic. Dominic, he's on the main roster now, right? And he's, a prominent figure. I know what's his name now, right? So I guess they did a good job there. I agree with you 100% with the rest of the family. Don't really need him. I do like the Aaliyah part of it with Murphy, just because it does give Murphy an actual storyline separate of the whole Seth Rollins exactly thing. I know he's kind of involved in it, but in a way, I just like the fact that Murphy is known now as a pretty good babyface now. And he's honestly been one of the most underrated wrestlers and performers in the WWE for so long. It's kind of nice that he has a character all of a sudden.
Yeah, he has depth. And he didn't have that because we all know how amazing he is inside the ring. He is so damn good. The matches he had against Aleister Black, that 2 out of 3 matches that he had, or 3 out of 3 actually, and he lost all three. And then that's when he went to Seth Rollins and he picked him up when he was down. And yeah, this does give him actual depth. It gives him something that he can sink his teeth into other than just showing us how great he is in the ring. I agree with. And I am excited for the matches that Seth and Murphy are going to have, presumably down the line here. That is what I'm really excited for. And hearing him more on the mic, it does give him a personality with Aaliyah. But I guess maybe it's Rey Mysterio's wife, who is just Miss Roboto. I mean, she has no emotion. There's just nothing there. Maybe she needs a software upgrade. I don't know. But she is. There's just nothing there. I'm over the Mysterio family as a whole. So Murphy, huge beneficiary, big fan of that. It's just that I'm just done with the storyline in general. It's time for it to go.
I agree 100%. It's definitely time to move on, at least for the Seth Rollins part of it. If they want to continue doing some of the Murphy and Aaliyah stuff, sure, whatever. But Seth Rollins needs to go do something else now.
Please. Yeah, no. I'm 100% on board for that. And I guess the next big thing that happened that many, a lot of people are talking about with the draft is not just New Day coming back and winning the tag team championships, which I really have a big problem with. I really, really don't like that they were just afforded an opportunity with no explanation. Even Corey Graves went off on that. You know, WWE a lot of times just gives title opportunities away. They always talk about earning things. There's never an explanation for a lot of these rematches, and somehow, you know, with even Zelina Vega, who just went in her singles career, her first singles match is a women's championship match. I love Zelina, but it makes no sense. And then New Day comes back, and what, just because of their tenure, they're afforded a championship opportunity? It just really dilutes championship importance. It dilutes the value of any championship and no one's explained how they earned it, but nonetheless, we have New Day win the championship, and then they're drafted to Raw. So maybe I'm not overthinking this. And when they're drafted to Raw, WWE actually explained that if a champion or champions are drafted to their opposing brand, that they bring the championship with them. But how the hell are they going to bring the SmackDown champion tag team championships to Raw? Are they just going to immediately transition to Raw tag team titles? And what happens to the Street Profits, who are the Raw tag team champions? Like, I don't understand how this happens. How can you be a SmackDown tag team champion and be on your opposing brand? It makes no sense. Am I overthinking this?
No, that's exactly what's going to happen. They're going to go to the Street Profits because they're going to probably go to SmackDown. They're going to be like, yo, guys. So about the whole Raw Tag Team Championships, yeah, you guys are now the SmackDown Tag Team Championships because, you know, it just happened to get drafted to SmackDown. Honestly, I can't agree with you more. I think it's crazy. What did the New Day do exactly to get a chance to win the titles? And then they, of course, win, right? Because they want to do the whole separation with Big E, which, by the way, we'll get to that, but I love that aspect. But I want to just talk about the New Day for now. Honestly, I think it makes no sense. I think it's stupid. I think they give no explanations. It drives me insane. It's kind of like roll-up victories. It drives me nuts. And honestly, this is so consistent on being inconsistent, and it drives me nuts, man. It drives me crazy. But I do want to ask you, Matt, what do you think about Big E officially? Now he's officially split up, working on a singles career.
First of all, I will say that I went berserk when I found out that not only did New Day come back, they won the tag team titles, which I really, really don't like, and we just talked about that. But I was concerned, oh, God, now Big E's career just got cut short. Maybe Vince McMahon had a second thought, and it didn't go as planned, and he's pulling back on that and just going with the New Day again and again and again. And I was really disappointed and angry because it felt like Big E's career hasn't even gotten started yet. He has essentially been, even after Xavier and Kofi Kingston were gone from injury, he has really kind of been the same guy. We have seen very little, although occasional, changes in his personality. He has just essentially been Big E from the New Day with pancakes and bizarre promos and just really flamboyant and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think he can exist in a singles career being just what the New Day was. And he needs to just evolve into his own music, into his own personality. And I've had a big problem with that. There's no evolution of the Big E character. And when the New Day came back, I go, well, everything's dead. And when they announced that New Day, meaning Xavier and Kofi Kingston as SmackDown Tag Team Champions, are going to Raw, I said, Hallelujah. And now Big E is forced to be on his own. They didn't seem happy about it, but it is going to be the best thing for Big E in his career. This tells me, this is WWE telling the fans, look, his singles career is not over. It's just getting started. I loved that message, and I hope it continues, and Big E evolves from the New Day personality. He needs to. He has to.
And what's so great about it now is, let's just say, you know, remember when Big E cut that amazing ass promo against the Usos in near WrestleMania time, and he went in full-blown serious mode? I love that fire. Yep. And when I saw that, I'm thinking, man, he would be a great heel one day. He would be a great heel one day, or at least he's going to be one hell of a babyface. And when I saw something like that, and I saw that fire, I kept on thinking, man, he's so restricted. He's so restricted. And now the fact that he's going out in a singles career, like you said, he's going to be getting a new entrance song, most likely. He's going to be getting a new persona, new gimmick look. We're hoping, right? Like, this is a hope, right? He's not just going to come out and, you know, ride a unicorn onto the stage, right? Like, we're hoping that this happens. And I think it's going to happen. And because of the separation, what's nice about this is he didn't exactly, like, break up when it comes to, like, you know how you break up when the Shield broke up? A clear betrayal. No, they're still friends. They're still cool, but they're on separate brands. So now you could technically turn heel with Big E in the future without having to kind of mess up that friendship, because they're not related, they're not connected as of this year. And that's something I would like them to see in the future. But right now, push him as a face, that's fine. But I want to see a new persona, and I want to see aggression, and I want to see those promos, those fire promos.
They're there. They live inside of him, beyond the inside jokes and the wink and nod at the camera and all the silly stuff that we've seen that has really, I think, well, it's way past its expiration date. I've been calling for the New Day to split up for years, but it's a cash cow with WWE. It's an extremely successful team that doesn't come along very often, and I understand their hesitation to break them up at times, but now it's official, and you're right. Like, this needs to be fiery Big E. Now, are we going to see him turn on a dime? Probably not. He's probably not going to come out next week and, you know, be, you know, walking down in a suit with a different entrance music. Just, I mean, like, it's not going to happen. I need a natural, organic.
No,
the suit thing is to me overplayed, but I don't think, or what I do want is an organic progression into a new character. That, I mean, that's fine. He can kind of be Big E from the New Day, but it slowly kind of just like fizzles away, and he's into his own guy, his own character. That's what he needs, and I hope that's what they're planning. But I don't need Big E coming out and finding bootios underneath the ring like he did, and like, I mean, it's just embarrassing. Like, and I mean, that was a bust ass match that he had with Sheamus. I will say they killed each other on SmackDown. Yeah. They were bleeding, and I give credit to both guys. How Big E wasn't pinned after White Noise threw a windshield. Or a bro kick on the outside at the beginning of the match is still beyond me. But Big E ends up winning with a big ending through the car, or through the table, rather. And that was the right thing to do. It was the right message to send. But what did you think about the match itself, quickly?
You know, Sheamus, you could put him against literally anybody in any sort of, like, street fight type style match, you know, false count anywhere match. And he will always put on a good show. Like the bar thing was great, you know, back when he was doing the bar with Cesaro there, all that stuff was great. And honestly, Sheamus is a guy that you can put him anywhere and do anything with him, and he'll do a good job. But I think that's where it's a good spot for Sheamus. And Big E turned out the fire. He had some good fire. But again, I agree with the bootios thing. I want to see him move on. It's time to move on as a character. They finally have the split, and that's good enough for me.
Exactly. In other kind of draft news, we had, predictably, Roman Reigns stay on SmackDown and Drew stay on Raw. And I guess I'm not sad about that. I mean, they could have flip-flopped, and you could have had Drew on SmackDown and Roman Reigns on Raw. But if it's just a 50-50 split and it's really not benefiting one or the other, then I'm fine with both staying there. They both feel pretty established in their own brands. Like when I think of Raw, I like to think of Drew McIntyre, and I'm glad that I think of Drew McIntyre associated with the Raw brand. And same with Roman Reigns. He is, as Corey Graves called it, the backbone of SmackDown. I mean, I do enjoy Roman Reigns, and God, I love his heel persona so much. I mean, it's just so damn refreshing to see him as a heel. He feels so natural. As all of us told WWE for 6 years now, after his forced babyface run for 6 years, that he would be an amazing heel. And so far, he has certainly shown more and more progression, and to me, felt way more natural as a heel. But him on SmackDown as the backbone and foundation of SmackDown, I really don't have a problem with these two staying on their respective brands. Do you?
Honestly, I knew Fox wasn't gonna let Roman Reigns leave. I was 100% certain that Roman Reigns was gonna stay on SmackDown. I had no doubt in my mind. And honestly, I like that the fact that there's both kind of, you know, they're still establishing themselves on those brands as being like the big guys. I know they have naturally that charisma. Roman Reigns obviously is the top guy in the company, so wherever he goes is basically the top brand. But honestly, it's nice. It's nice to see them keep on, you know, trucking along, establishing the brands quite nicely. And Drew McIntyre, you know, I've always told this, man, I'm a huge fan of Drew McIntyre. I've always been. I don't know how much longer he's going to be holding that championship. And I honestly don't even know who might be taking that championship off of him. I would actually love to ask you, Matt, is there anybody particular that you think that is going to be taking that championship off? Is it going to be Randy Orton or somebody else, maybe from NXT coming up? Keith Lee, what do you have in mind there with Drew McIntyre?
I think Randy Orton will do it. I mean, although if you guys, and when I say you guys, my listeners know, like, that I have been a terrible predictor of Randy Orton winning the championship over the last 2 months. Like, I have, since they had their first encounter a couple of months ago, I said, Randy's taken it, he's got to. And then he lost. And then he lost again in the ambulance match. And now he's got the actual Hell in a Cell match. You would think third time's a charm. You can't have a hot heel, as great as Randy Orton has been, to lose again to Drew McIntyre. As great of a champion as Drew is, and that's the thing. Like, I love him as champion. I have no problem with him as champion. I've just been of the belief that having an extremely hot heel, and as seasoned as Randy Orton is, and how great he could be as a heel champion, I see a bigger benefit in that than Drew McIntyre continuing his reign. We've had him as champion now for 6 months. Like, we've had our fun. I'm totally good with it if they decide to kill it now. I know a lot of fans are probably out there going, no, he's great as champion. But you can't tell me that a babyface in chase mode for a hot heel who is champion isn't a better story. Having a babyface in chase mode is all about the story, because you're on the journey with them to get to the championship, climb that mountain to get and overcome the heel to grab that championship. So I've been a Randy Orton supporter to become WWE champion forever now, and I hope it comes to fruition in Hell in a Cell. And it's weird because people think you don't want Drew as champion. I do, but I want Randy Orton even more because I think that's a better story to tell.
It all depends on what they're trying to do. They know for a fact that Randy Orton as a champion would work. He would absolutely kill it. He's been on the top of his game now for over 4 to 6 months. He's been insane. Honestly, cutting promos in the middle of matches, it's just so good. I think what they're trying to do is they want to make sure they establish Drew McIntyre more than anybody else. They need to make sure that he is that upper echelon talent, that high caliber talent. And if he did lose to Randy Orton the first or second time, I do think personally, even though Randy Orton is as good as he is right now, I think it would actually benefit Drew a little bit more that he wins those first two matches now, because if he does now lose against Randy Orton the third time, well, he beat him 2 times. He still looks strong. Randy finally gets it. So honestly, I see what the WWE is doing. I obviously see what you're saying. It's a tricky one, right? It's a tricky one because the ratings are, you know, we can go for a rant about that, but you know, it's a tricky one, Matt.
It is, and that's why I'm struggling, because I hate saying that I don't want Drew as champion, because I do, but I just, in my mind, I see a great heel champion in Randy, and it does all depend on what they're trying to do. I mean, if they are trying to prep Randy Orton and the whole WWE Universe environment for a Edge return, then having Orton as champion may make sense. It all depends on what Edge's return is scheduled for. From what I'm hearing, it could be in a couple of months. So if Randy has the belt from October to December or January, or maybe through WrestleMania, that's not really asking a ton where people could complain that, oh God, it's a legacy star, an old guy holding the belt. You know, it's a short enough time where Edge in chase mode would be a whole lot of fun. I just don't know. I would think that's the end game, is Edge challenging Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. And some people also may say, because I've heard it, that, well, wait a minute, Edge, you know how old Edge is? Why would we want him as WWE Champion? Come on. Well, first of all, it is not uncommon for WWE legends to return and capture a championship for a short amount of time to help new guys out, to help new talent, to create ratings. I mean, they are needle movers. I believe Edge as champion could be a needle mover. And there's a story to tell there. I'm not saying for a long Edge run as champion, if Randy Orton becomes champion and if Edge challenges Randy Orton. I mean, I'm like three steps ahead of myself, but I have no problem with Edge becoming WWE champion, which I think that's what they're probably trying to do. Does this rivalry between Edge and Orton need a championship? No, it doesn't. I don't think it does. If I had a choice, I'd probably exclude it because I don't think it's needed. But if that's where they're going, I have no problem with it.
Hey, Matt, you cut a pretty good promo there, man. I think you should be Ricochet's new manager. I think that would really
well. Well, I'm the resident superhero, whatever the hell that means. Like, I mean, when they call Ricochet the resident superhero, I'm like, what has he done that's superhero? Like, I mean, what? Because he can do crazy moves in the ring. I mean,
at a great rate.
Exactly. Does he have a superpower for losing? I mean, like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't.
I can go on like a 50-minute tangent on Ricochet and how much I'm pissed off about every single aspect of his character to the way they booked them. Oh,
awful.
My God. Ricochet, you don't have a long enough radio show, my friend.
God, I know. I'm feeling the anger boiling up in me as well. So we should probably suppress that for fear of really just ranting for a good 30, 40 minutes. I agree. I'm with you. I feel it boiling. I'm going to move on to Lars Sullivan. He attacks Riddle and Hardy. And I didn't see this coming. The freak is back. I'm kind of sad he shaved his beard a little bit. I think he looked more like a freak with the longer beard. But he's still in really good shape. I think he's got a great look. It's great to see him back. I didn't expect it. I don't think anybody saw this coming. And I have no problem with it. It's weird that he attacked Riddle and Hardy and tried to get a hold of The Miz and all that stuff. He's just there to cause destruction. So I guess WWE wanted to put him in a position where there was the most people in the ring that he could destroy. So I don't think it's anything personal against Hardy and Riddle. I just don't know his purpose. I mean, I don't even know. I can't even think of a Lars Sullivan promo. We know nothing about this guy. What did you think about his return? Did you feel anything for this?
I felt quite a bit, but honestly, first of all, I didn't see it coming not even a mile away. I so completely forgot about Lars Sullivan. I was actually just randomly looking. I'm like, when was the last time we saw him? And it was like, I don't know, man, like 9 months ago or something. Like, it was a long time ago when he got injured. And obviously all the backstage drama and all the, other type of drama that I don't know if I should bring up on the show. But, Lars Sullivan as a character, as a gimmick, I think it works. I really like the character. I like that he looks, mean, strong. He does have a natural charisma when it comes to looking like a badass. It's something that a lot of big guys don't seem to have. And he does have it. He does legitimately look kind of like a serial killer. Like he looks like he's going to kill everybody in the middle of the ring, which is, as a character, that works very well for him. But I didn't see it coming, but I am happy he's back because I like I said before, and I'll say it again, I've always been a fan of Lars Sullivan's gimmick, maybe not the person, but the gimmick itself. And I think he does have a good mid-card appeal. Eventually, maybe he can work his way a little bit higher. But I don't know. I quite enjoyed it, to be honest. I had a mini markout moment just because it was so kind of out of nowhere.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's like, I'm excited. I don't feel angry for the character. I don't feel like I wouldn't cheer for the character. I'm just kind of like, cool, let's see where this goes. Yeah. Because we don't know a whole lot about him. He feels like he's kind of the Braun Strowman from a few years ago when he was just doing squash matches and you're like, and he was coming out and saying, Foley, I want real competition. And, you know, he's, I feel like that's where he's at, of just establishing him as a monster. He'll squash people week after week after week and take maybe the Braun Strowman path to the main event if he's able to get there and avoid drama and avoid his anxiety and all the things that he's had problems with in the past. He certainly had a checkered past of injury and backstage problems and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully things are resolved and he can move forward. But yeah, Lars Sullivan, look, I'm fine. I'm fine with it. I also want to move on though, because when I saw this in the first round here, we had Drew McIntyre. We had Roman Reigns on SmackDown and Raw. We also had Asuka staying on Raw. And we had Seth Rollins going to SmackDown, which was, to me, the biggest move, of the entire draft. But the Hurt Business is in the first round. I mean, the Hurt Business is in the first round. Look, they are a mainstay on Raw. They have been in a lot of segments. They have a problem with Retribution. I was surprised that the Hurt Business was in the very first round. Were you surprised about that as well? And also Asuka staying on Raw?
Yeah, I think the first round was a little bit early, too early for the Hurt Business. But what's nice about it is they are clearly establishing their stable as a high-end main event slash kind of upper main event type stable, heel stable. And what I like about that is because they've naturally progressed up. Like, this isn't a group that's kind of been stale. This isn't a group that's kind of not doing much. They have been slowly recruiting, slowly getting better. The matches have been getting better. They're more, Bobby Lashley looks more legitimate every single week. And I like that aspect because MVP has done such a good job overall. Now, obviously, what they're going to be doing is the Hurt Business versus Retribution, something there. The only thing I don't really like about it is, like, what are they, right? They're a heel group, but Retribution's a heel group, right? There's kind of a heel group, right? So, like, what is that exactly? Why is it the Hurt Business exactly that has this problem with them? Like, that's the thing that doesn't make much sense to me overall as a storyline.
It doesn't make sense, and I know that they offered their services to Adam Pearce, who I guess they negotiated some kind of monetary supplement to them as to providing services to protect Raw, because his security team was, you know, like about as good as a middle school football team. I mean, it was terrible. I mean,
both of us up, Matt. Seriously, we should go do security.
Yes, I'm serious. I mean, my 8-year-old nephew and his friends could probably have done a better job than Adam Pearce's crack security team week after week after week after month. But the Hurt Business, I guess, is their problem is just that they decided to stand up for Raw, which is weird as a heel group that you would stand up for the brand, which is, I mean, I don't understand that, but it's the only group WWE's got that has any legs to it, so they decided to do it. And MVP is clearly the glue of this entire team. There's no question about it. MVP, I think, is doing better work now than he's ever done in WWE, even with his first run of Ball In and all that stuff and his program with Matt Hardy back in the mid-2000s, all that stuff. This is the best version of MVP. He has way overachieved what I thought he was going to do in his second run here in WWE. And to see Bobby Lashley involved and Shelton Benjamin being really resurrected from the grave, and Cedric Alexander as well. I mean, really, Shelton Benjamin was kind of like the star that's like, oh yeah, he used to do some cool stuff. He took a great Sweet Chin Music from Shawn Michaels on Raw like 12 years ago. And, you know, like, that's pretty much all you remember. And he was doing this weird thing, if you remember, where he was like following something in the camera, like there was a fly in the room or something. Remember that? That whole thing where he would just like stare around, like, what?
Yeah.
So Shelton Benjamin came from literally the grave back into relevancy in this group. And I, you know what? That is probably what WWE's message here with drafting them in the first round is, this is a serious group. This is a group you should take for real because we're drafting them in the first round. So I agree. It just, to me, they're not there yet, but they told you this is where they're going to be, and I'm fine with that.
You know, MVP is like the opposite version of Triple H. Instead of grabbing a shovel and shoveling him down, he literally grabs the shovel to lift all these characters and wrestlers out of the ground and says, hey, join me. I'll show you how it's done. This, honestly, this is by far the best I have ever, I mean, ever seen MVP. I think not only that, I think he's earned himself a contract for the next 3 to 5 years. I think there's just so much you could do with him. Even if he, you know, even if the Hurt Business eventually starts to fade, and you could always put him with somebody, right? Because he's such a good talker. He's natural. He's charismatic. And he is a guy who looks good in a suit. I will say that. One of the few. Okay.
No, I agree. Yeah. No, he wears it well. I love MVP. I'd like to see him and Paul Heyman spar, you know, if as managers.
Hey, did I mention that Ricochet's on Monday Night Raw?
Oh, God. Well, we need a superhero. Yeah, I didn't do anything for me. But what did do something for me was AJ Styles going to Raw. He was the very first pick of the second round. AJ Styles going to Raw. So he went from Raw, traded to SmackDown with really no explanation other than, hey, Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode got drafted to Raw. And SmackDown got AJ Styles, although Robert Roode wasn't there for like 4 months, so that was a terrible move of whoever actually managed that trade. If this was true, a true sports environment, that person would have gotten fired on the spot. But AJ Styles goes back to Raw, which is, I think, a good thing. I think he's pretty much worn out SmackDown. Having him going back to Raw, new matchups, I think having him on Raw is a little more exciting than on SmackDown. So what did you think about AJ Styles going back to Raw?
Here's the thing about AJ Styles, and what's weird about AJ overall to me is that I feel like he's too good to be in the mid card, yet if he needs some sort of character change to be in the upper card. It's weird. I don't know. It's, you know what he reminds me of? He kind of needs a Finn Balor-esque type change with him. He needs something that makes him super legitimate again. And he's kind of fluctuating. Like, when I see AJ Styles just even a year ago, I remember marking out. Like, I remember getting excited for his matches. Now it's just kind of like, oh, AJ Styles on a match on SmackDown. Oh, AJ Styles on a match on Raw. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have that feeling anymore. And I don't know what they could do. I don't know if it's a new stable. I know he tried stuff, obviously, you know, with Machine Gun Kelly over there and, but in Gallows, but you know, I don't know, man. AJ Styles is one of those weird ones where I don't think they know what they're doing with him, and I don't know what I would do with him, honestly. One of the few people I don't have a legitimate storyline in my head for.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now that you mention it, name value, still got it, but how I feel when I see him, he does. He feels like he's kind of in purgatory. Like, he's a big name. You know he's capable of more, but he's just kind of floating there like, okay, so what are you doing, right? He doesn't have a clear direction. And AJ Styles, and I can't remember the source, or I would actually give credit to whoever the source was of interviewing AJ Styles. After WrestleMania, when he was buried by The Undertaker in the Boneyard match, he said that would be a great opportunity, because he was missing for a while after that on SmackDown, for his character to undergo a change. Because if you're buried alive, hey, that could actually change your personality. It could change your perspective. You could get darker. And instead, he just came back as the same age, old AJ Styles, like nothing happened. And I totally agree with AJ. He needs, and you, that he needs something to keep him going. He needs to evolve. He's, you know, I made this analogy too, I think last week, that it's like chewing the same piece of gum. It's like, all right, I'm ready to move on to the next piece. That's what it is with AJ. And I know he could be really good, but he's just the same guy. Like, nothing's changing. And that's what the problem is. An evolution of his character is what's missing.
Hey, Matt, let me just say one thing randomly here. Did you notice that Otis was drafted on SmackDown, but Tucker was not?
Yes, I did. I did. Yep. I did. But
what happens there?
I think that Vince McMahon, since he realized that Otis could be a comedy character, and saw how big his gut was, and he just is playing off of him wearing four sizes too small of t-shirts and he loves food and all this stuff. I'm not. And let me just get right off the bat here. I am not a fan of the Otis character that Vince McMahon has created. I was a fan of the Otis character in Heavy Machinery before Vince got his eyes on him and realized he could be a comedy relief character. But I am not a fan of what Vince has done with him because of just, to me, it's not funny. I like Otis in the ring, but even in the ring, he makes jokes out of the moves he does. He's too much of a comedy character. He can be a serious dude and have a really good run as a tag team with Tucker. And they never got that. They never got a fair shake at a tag team championship. They have never gone on a big run. It's just like they can't get started. They're still stuck in first gear. And now if Tucker's not on the same brand as Otis, I mean, Otis is clearly going out on his own, which I think Vince McMahon envisioned from the beginning. And now Mandy Rose is on Raw and Otis is on SmackDown. That's fine. Keep them apart. I don't need that again. I think it's just a way to get Otis as a singles star, and hopefully they get the Money in the Bank off of him. I do not want Otis as Money in the Bank winner actually cashing in and winning. I don't know. I feel like I'm hating on Otis. It's just the Vince McMahon version of Otis I despise.
You know, Otis is kind of like just a more comedy version of Big E back when he started as the super comedy version of the New Day.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, that's what he is, right? And I agree. I pretty much agree with every single thing you said. I will say, though, some of his backstage promos, like when he talks, man, so funny. But like, that's, you know, far and few between.
Some. Although there has been times I go, huh, and then I'll just go, oh. Like, it's like, I mean, it's like 95% of the time, it's my absolute disdain for what Vince has done to him and his vision of it. Because, you know, Vince McMahon's probably sitting in Gorilla knee slapping about how funny some of this stuff is. And everyone's looking around like, Vince, this is awful. I mean, even if you remember the look that Corey Graves and Michael Cole gave after the segment this past week, today, I would say last night, because I very rarely do shows the same day. But if you look at that reaction that Michael Cole and Corey Graves gave after the Otis segment, they just stare into the camera blankly for like 5 seconds. It is hilarious because that's exactly how I feel. It's like, this is mind-numbingly bad. And they obviously didn't say that, but it was just a perfect meme to create for how badly Vince McMahon has ruined the Otis character.
Yeah. You know, I could do a killer Otis impersonation too, eh?
If you're going to tell me that, you can't not do it.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Tucky, get over here. I have a match a little bit later on tonight. Oh, yeah, give me some ham. Oh, Mandy. Oh, yeah.
There you go. That's awesome. That is awesome. What makes it even better is, more believable is, you're not on video. So, you know, if someone jumped in at that point, they're like, does he have Tucker on or Otis on his podcast?
I just gave me a great idea.
No, that's awesome. No, good stuff, man. That's awesome. Right. Did you have to practice this, or did you just, like, how did you come across that?
Honestly, it might be the only talent I have in this entire world. So let's just go with that.
Well, I love it. Good stuff. Yeah, I mean, utilize that. I think there might be something you could do with that. But so anyway, Otis, look, I'm not a fan. I hope that he has more in his tank other than just being a comedic relief guy that Vince looks at and finds him funny because he can eat food and he'll be the first one at a food fight. And what he did at Money in the Bank, stopping at the cafeteria to eat food. I mean, all this stuff that's just god-awful. I'm sure he'll be in a gravy bowl this Thanksgiving on SmackDown. I'm sure he'll play Santa Claus on the Christmas edition of SmackDown. He'll play all of the terrible roles that are associated with his weight and all this stuff. It's just, it's not funny, especially the fact that he's a Money in the Bank briefcase holder. And the last thing I'll say about Otis, if this was in front of a live crowd, they would have already turned on him about 2 months ago. I'm telling you right now, if this was in front of a live audience, the audience would have organically turned against him. I just feel that.
Man, I got to respect Otis, though, making us talk about him for like 6 minutes. That's pretty good.
Oh, no, I have no problem with the guy. I just, the presentation of the character. All right. Well, moving down the line here, some of the women's moves here. We had Sasha Banks stay on SmackDown. We had Naomi, who's in the round two, which was kind of surprising given she's been completely irrelevant for the last like 6 months. But hey, like, I'm fine with resurrecting Naomi. She has been, I think she's underutilized for sure. And we have Bianca Belair coming to SmackDown. So give me some of those thoughts about Sasha, Naomi, and Bianca.
So Naomi being drafted in the second round makes makes so little sense. It just, they've been literally squashing her for so long. She wasn't even in the qualification match for one of the titles when they had the Battle Royal. I think it was a Battle Royal. Now, yeah. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Or Gauntlet. Yeah. And, you know, it just makes no sense that she's picked thing. But good for her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She must have really fought for that. As for Bianca Belair, oh, man, I think they're grooming her. Oh, I think they already started doing these little weird back, you know, promos with her, like, out, you know, out qualifying everybody with the athleticism and all that lovely stuff. And,
yep.
You know, I think they're high on her. I think they're very high on her. And I also think they're high on the Street Profits, the husband there in Montez Ford. So, you know, Bianca Belair, I think she has just an immense amount of talent. She's still very raw. I think there's a lot of work to be done. I think her promos are, I don't know. I don't get a good feeling of them yet. I don't think they're bad or per se. I just don't think they're great either. But I think they're definitely, there's something to work with there. Again, Sasha Banks on SmackDown. Another interesting choice. Did they say where, oh yeah, Asuka went on Raw, right? So then you have Asuka on Raw as well. And That one is the weird one to me, because she's been on Raw for, God, how long now, right? Like, this isn't just the one time. Has she ever been on? Wait, I don't remember now. Help me out here, Matt. Was she on SmackDown a little while ago or not?
Asuka? Yeah, it's been a while, but she has been, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while, though, right?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, so I thought maybe they'd move her over. So the fact that she's on Monday Night Raw still, it makes me wonder, because I thought, you know, Bianca Belair was like a natural eventually progression for Asuka. Who knows, like, what's going to happen there? Like, who's challenging for Asuka? I'm looking at the lineup so far. Mandy Rose, I know. Dana Brooke, no. Naomi, no.
Yeah.
You know? You know,
I will say this. What's sad is, and I didn't get to be Dana Brooke and Dana Brooke yet, but it's really bad. What Dana Brooke's been in WWE for, I don't know, how many years now? Like 3, 4 years? 4, maybe 5 years? Like longer. Maybe longer. But Dana Brooke has been there for a long time. And she still has on her resume talking about it being a fitness model, right? Like, she doesn't even have any accolades on her resume that you would put in. Former WWE Women's Champion. You know, former Women's Tag Team Champion. Won a Battle Royal at WrestleMania. Nothing. She's got all of her accolades that they put on the graphic for Dana Brooke has to do with her former life. It has nothing
Matt, let
to
me
do.
Interrupt you.
Nothing.
Matt, let me interrupt you. Bianca Belair had more fitness promos than Dana Brooke has, and Bianca's been on the roster for like how many months?
Yeah.
Right? It makes no sense. It's the same character. Continue, sorry.
No. I don't know what to make of Dana Brooke, Fisher Fowl. I don't know what she is. She's kind of a weird promo. She's athletic as hell. We know that. But I don't know what to make of Dana Brooke. I don't know. Bianca Belair, to your point, yeah, they're grooming her. I think she had an amazing showing at the Royal Rumble, the Women's Royal Rumble this past year, if I'm not mistaken. She was a big standout, eliminating I forget how many women, and certainly made a statement there. And the whole relationship with Montez Ford doesn't hurt. The angle that she had about Zelina Vega poisoning Montez Ford, which was, I mean, that was just, to me, that was just, I mean, it got eyeballs on her, but it was absolutely preposterous. That whole angle was preposterous. And apparently the poison is only activated in Montez Ford when he does the Ultimate Warrior rope shaking. If you notice, that's the only time that he dropped. And it also doesn't, it kind of goes and comes back. Like, when he shook the rope, he collapsed, and then he shook the rope again and collapsed. It was just ridiculous. I mean, that was a crazy storyline. But
should have sent Jack Bauer to come, you know, protect Montez from that. You know, I will say one final comment on Dana Brooke here. You know, when she came out, like, I don't know how long ago is this, maybe 9 months ago, maybe older, but she came out in like this kind of like weird friendship storyline, and she came out in jeans and a little top. And I'm like, wow, there's a new character for her. She's coming out in these jeans. You know, she looks really like extra, kind of like a new gimmick, more attractive in a way. Like, just me personally, everybody has their own opinions. Looked a little bit more attractive, a different gimmick, a different character. And I'm like, oh, this is great. And then next week she went back looking exactly the same. And I'm like, wow, it's such a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? And people were, believe it or not, Matt, people were getting behind Dana Brooke for a while there. It was like, a 2 month section where people were legitimately cheering for Dana Brooke. And then they did nothing with it, right? So it's just like, what's the point, right? If you're not going to do anything with her and she's going to be the same character, it's the same thing that pissed me off about Robert Roode coming back as the same character that left drive me nuts.
But no, he grew his hair out. He grew his hair out. He's different.
Matt, I'm telling you, I'm screaming in my microphone. Drove me insane when I saw him coming out and doing the glorious thing. I'm like, really? That's the same ass person. You couldn't even do anything different. I have no interest in him. But anyways, continue.
No, he's Robert Roode. Look, the guy is a one-word gimmick. And it's a great word, and I actually love his entrance music. It's one of those entrance music's entrance themes that gets stuck in your head the whole day. Like, I mean, if you think about his entrance song, and most people are now that I'm talking about it, it gets stuck in your head and is a catchy tune, whether you admit it or not, it just is. And his entrance is certainly, it's good. It's really good. But outside of that one word, the guy doesn't have a whole lot to do or talk about. Everything has to end with being glorious. Everything is glorious. He needs to move on. He needs some depth in his character, and I agree. They could have repackaged him there, but no. Same with John Morrison. Mr. Johnny Drip Drip comes back and gets placed right back where he left 7 years ago with WWE with The Miz and a tag team. When WWE just doesn't know what to do, they go, well, let's just kind of put him back where they belong or back where they left. And instead of evolving the character, they did it most recently with AJ Styles coming back with no progression after being buried alive. John Morrison coming back in a tag team with The Miz after being away from WWE for how many years. And then they did that with, Dean Ambrose. When he came back after an injury, when he got all jacked up and came back and just rejoined the Shield again. I mean, and we all think, oh, maybe they'll do something with Dean Ambrose when he returns. And they didn't. And it's just so many examples. And when they don't know what to do, they just go back to what they know instead of taking a chance.
The only thing that would be glorious if Robert Roode left again and comes back with a Val Venus gimmick, which I thought they were going to be doing like a Rick Roode type Val Venus type gimmick. Yeah. I thought they're going to do that before, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. This is exactly what would work for him. And we need a longer show for that.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating when you think, oh, let's see what they do to change this up, or you know, even a small evolution, and when they come back exactly the way they left, it is disappointing. Okay, so a couple more things that happened on SmackDown outside of the draft. Sure. Sasha and Bayley had their match that everyone has been really talking about and have been really foreseeing for the last year is when is this going to collapse? And we finally got the collapse, and it was well done. And Sasha got a small measure of revenge with WWE's fascination with kendo sticks lately over the last month. Everyone's got a kendo stick to attack somebody. And she got a small measure of revenge. She gets a championship opportunity, which to me on so many levels doesn't make sense that you would do it on SmackDown. With really only 1 week to promote the match that everyone's been waiting to see. And yeah, we all knew it was going to be a screwy finish with no actual title change. But the fact that they just plopped it on SmackDown, and maybe the reasoning was to tell fans, hey, well, we don't know if they're going to be drafted to different brands. We got to do the match now. That wasn't ever told to me, but I would assume that's the reason. And, you know, the match was fine. It ended fairly in short order with Bayley getting disqualified on purpose, and then Sasha later claiming that they're going to face each other at Hell in a Cell. Well, who makes that match? I mean, some of these logic, there's just so like small amount of logic in some of these storylines where, wait a minute, how is Sasha Banks claiming that she's going to face Bayley at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view inside Hell in a Cell for the championship? Did Bayley agree to this? How did this happen? Is Adam Pearce back there signing contracts? I don't know. Maybe I'm just nitpicking. But we get them inside of a cell in just a couple of weeks. And I would think Sasha would capture it, but I wouldn't bank on it, pun intended. I would probably say that Bayley retains, and then Sasha maybe gets it at Rumble. I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking that people think that it's a foregone conclusion Sasha captures the belt here, but I don't think so. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com.
And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
You're not nitpicking, man. It's one of the stupidest things ever to see Sasha and Bayley having a, you know, technically a championship match on SmackDown advertised. I know it was a screwy finish. I know it was quick, whatever. It so hurt my actual want to see these two in an actual longer, normal match. I did not want to see them at all until they had their final beautiful, beautiful match together. And now they put them on SmackDown. It's just like, okay, I care still, but I care so much less. It was stupid. I don't know who writes this crap sometimes. Like, I'm trying to think, Matt. Like, let me talk to you. Heart to heart, my friend. I'm trying to think behind the scenes, okay? So the writer goes up to Vince McMahon and says, hey, Vince, I got this great idea to finally put Sasha and Bayley to have a match together. And Vince says, oh, you know what? That sounds like a great idea. When do you want to do it? On Hell in a Cell? No, let's put it on SmackDown. Let's put it on SmackDown. Oh, yeah, but didn't we build this up for the last 9 months? Yeah, it's okay. Just put it on SmackDown. It's just a little bit. Just tease him a little bit. Oh, it just drives me nuts, man. No. It just drives me nuts.
When Sasha said that last week, I'm like, what do you mean your championship match is next week? What the hell are you talking about? Why would that? That's like the equivalent, although it's probably a little bit of a far stretch, when Austin did his famous walkout back in 2003 and Vince was trying to have a qualifier match between Brock Lesnar and Stone Cold with little to no advertisement and looking at that as a money match and putting it on Raw. Like, what the hell are you doing? It doesn't make any sense. They could have at least, even though I don't agree with it, like I said, they could have at least told us, well, you know, Sasha said to the officials, well, look, I don't know if we're going to be on the same brand. I want a piece of Bayley before the draft happens. So we need to make this match for SmackDown. That would have been a little bit more acceptable rather than just no explanation. And then WWE just throwing everything they have at this show. And it seems like they did. Look, they had Sasha Banks versus Bayley, the program that they've been building for over a year on SmackDown with a non-finish. We had Lars Sullivan return. We had the draft itself. We had The Fiend compete in a match for the first time ever on SmackDown. Like, there were so many things. Like, what were they trying to accomplish here tonight? I don't know. They threw a lot at this show, thinking maybe the draft would create a lot more attention, so they're going to do other stuff to maybe get the casual viewer who's tuning in for the draft to maybe stick around after the draft. I don't know. But, I'm fine with this program continuing. It should continue.
Train's coming.
No, I hear it.
Train's coming.
Right.
I do apologize.
I barely hear it. No, it's probably louder for you than for me. I didn't hear it.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it wasn't crazy. But having Sasha in this match against Bayley, we all knew she wasn't going to win. And I'm looking forward to their Hell in a Cell match. I think it's deserving of the Cell. At least there's that. I'm not a fan of matches that just get stuck in there because it's part of the pay-per-view schedule. I think this match is deserving of Inside the Cell, given what's happened and what Bayley's done to Sasha. But do you see Sasha capturing the belt here, or do you think they wait a little longer?
No, they'll wait a little bit longer. Let's extend it. Let's extend it a little bit longer. I do want to ask you, Matt, personally, what do you think about having three Hell in a Cell matches this year?
Let me say this. If you've heard me before, I know that maybe
I listen to you every single week, my friend, or every more than once a week.
Then you might get the same thing that I've said before, because I've been very consistent about this. The fact that WWE puts in a match that is so special, or was once so special and meant so much, as just part of the pay-per-view schedule, and whatever matches are happening at that time, whatever programs are happening at that time, we'll just throw them in the Cell, is such a disgrace to the Hell in a Cell match of what it meant. The Hell in a Cell match, think about how awesome it was. And yes, back when Shawn Michaels faced The Undertaker in 97 at Bad Blood, exactly, what, 23 years ago? It happened in October, which was the very first match I ever saw as a wrestling fan at 12 years old. So that felt so damn special. Triple H versus Mick Foley felt so special. Mick Foley versus The Undertaker in 1998, the famous toss off the Cell, felt very special. Mick Foley got retired inside the Cell against Triple H.
in that very match. Shawn Michaels versus Triple H, I think it was actually at another Bad Blood in 2003. Like, there have been some really good moments and programs deserving of the sell, and yet WWE takes that and goes, oh, well, gimmick pay-per-views sell, man. No, they don't. I don't believe that fans want to see a gimmick match that is not deserving of the gimmick. Like, if a program is deserving of the sell, which means the program has been so damn intense, it's so damn personal, they can't contain these women or men, and they need to be locked inside the cell. To me, it would mean so much more than just building it into the damn schedule just because they want to have a cute little gimmick pay-per-view every single year. I think it's awful, and it really detracts from what the Hell in a Cell match used to mean, when it was special, when it didn't happen a whole lot, and only programs that were deserving of the cell got it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to give Shane O'Mac a little bit of love too, man, because when he came back and he jumped off that top of the thing, I remember that moment. I'm going to remember that moment till I'm dead. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, and that was a great spot by Shane, and the fact that he did it at his age, or all, just everything that went around that whole storyline, I thought that was great, so I think he deserves a little bit of love on top of it as well.
Yep.
But I agree with you completely, wholeheartedly, man. It's too much. Like, Hell in a Cell, in my personal opinion, should be one match. One match on the card, because it's a special team match. It's like Elimination Chamber in a way, but like a lot more important, supposed to be anyway. And, you know, at least Elimination Chamber, you can kind of do a female version, a male version of it. But again, it's the end of the show type big match, right? And the Hell in a Cell, that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a big conclusion to a massive heated feud. And that's what it's supposed to be. And the fact that there's so many of them, like, I know what they're going to do. One's going to jump off one match. The other one's going to be just inside it the whole time. And the other one's going to be outside. Maybe they'll fight on top of it. You know, like, they're going to mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, it's just, I don't want to see it. I want to see one match, and it's not going to happen. It's going to be three of them. And I think it does hurt. I think it should have been, honestly, Sasha Bailey if they didn't do this the whole, you know, the whole SmackDown garbage thing that they did. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm more frustrated than I thought I was going to be, Matt. What did you do to me, man?
And well, let me get this out of the way, too. Like, with the Hell in a Cell structure itself, are they just going to keep it painted red? I mean, I think, is that what they're really?
I think so.
Yeah, I actually, to me, that also kind of cutes it up. Like, don't try to paint it. Like, leave it alone. To me, that steel mesh look is a much more barbaric and sinister look than dressing it up with lipstick. I mean, that's essentially what they've done. I know it's red. It's supposed to represent blood. Well, here's the thing. You guys don't use blood. No, blood never happens. And how somebody's skull gets rammed into steel time after time after time and nobody bleeds is also like a little bit, hey, take me out of the moment. I mean, that's what that makes me feel like. And
Matt, is that what it was? Is that actually it? They made it red because it was supposed to represent blood?
I can't. Tell me another reason why it would be red. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. Vince McMahon turns the lights red when The Fiend had matches for a while. At least that made a little more sense because it's a specialty match. But, like, when I see it red, I don't think of anything. I thought it's because, oh, it's a Monday Night Raw match or something.
Oh,
like,
no. No.
I don't. Oh,
because
God.
A lot of times, I remember their logos for like the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, or especially like Bad Blood, or whenever the Hell in a Cell match was taking place, there would be like drops of blood in the logo or whatever. Like, and how many times in actual matches that, you know, prior to the PG era from 2007 and backwards, were a lot of Hell in a Cell matches. Almost every single one had blood in it. And so when I see Hell in a Cell, I still am disappointed when I don't see color. And I'm not saying that somebody should cut themselves and, you know, put themselves at risk or anything like that. But there are times that I really do miss blood. I mean, there are times.
Hey, Matt, I got this for you, buddy. I looked it up. Here we go. It says it's because the WWE decided to jazz up the cell by making it red to make it look more evil.
See?
And also to sell more merchandise.
Told you. They just essentially made it cute. They did. They put makeup on it. That's what they did. I told you. It's just, I don't know. I don't need the need for it is just not there. I wasn't looking at the mesh going, oh my God, can they just paint this damn thing? You know, I mean, did anybody say that? They're so markety gimmicky. Like, when they did that, it looks, I don't know, it just takes away from it on top of what they've already done, making it a part of the pay-per-view schedule. I have such a problem with the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view because the Hell in a Cell match itself is so near and dear to my heart. It got me into wrestling, so there's also that part of it. Personally, the match itself got me into wrestling, but also because what it used to mean, there's no meaning to it anymore. It's just there, and you know, whatever's going on, stick them in. It's ridiculous. And I know the marketing department's going, well, Hell in a Cell, like, people know what it is. It's a great way to sell. And no, it's not, because to me, when you have all these gimmicks, you have the TLCs, you have the Hell in a Cells, you have Elimination Chamber, and don't get me wrong, sometimes they're worth the matches, they're worth the program, the story, and absolutely, I'm not saying every time it's terrible, but I think it's also a bandage or a deodorant for really a lack of good storytelling to have gimmicks in matches when they know that the story's not great, but maybe if we do this or add chairs or add tables or add, you know, whatever, that it'll cover some of the terrible storytelling that we've had. To me, great storytelling, characters that I care about, and a storyline in a personal feud or over a championship that makes sense and intriguing promos, that is what makes pro wrestling great. It's what makes TV great. It's what makes movies great. You don't necessarily have to have violence to make it great or gimmicks to make it great. That, to me, is admission, kind of a underlying omission or admission, I should say, that you cannot tell a story properly and you have to add these superficial items to your story to make it cover the lack of you to being able to tell a story, if that makes sense. Okay, I'm getting ramped up.
You should take it one step further. Why don't they make it pink when a New Day matches, have little unicorns on top of it and throwing little pancakes on the ground? I could see something like that happening in the future, eh?
I'm really trying to keep this a PG show. I'm really trying. Like, I'm really...
You're doing a great job, I feel.
It's getting me heated. But the sad thing is, as absurd as that sounds, I could actually see something like that happening where they like paint it like a rainbow, right? Like they have all the colors of the rainbow painted on the cell. I mean, I could actually see that. Or like pancakes on a pole match or something. Oh, God. All right. Well, we have The Fiend versus Kevin Owens on SmackDown. That was the final thing that I wanted to ask you about. The Fiend, for very first match on SmackDown, they threw everything at this show. And Kevin Owens loses, and that to me was actually sadly predictable. The Fiend takes punishment, and his whole gimmick is no selling. Like, that is The Fiend's gimmick. I just, no selling. That's what he does. To me, to a fault. I think there's no selling, or I'm sorry, there's a lesser degree of selling, and then there's no selling. When you no sell, it exposes the business like crazily. I mean, like, it just takes me out of the moment because I don't want somebody to no sell. I want it to be kind of like Undertaker no sell, where maybe he gets hit with a finish and he lays there and you're wondering if he's going to get up, but at least he's selling it in those moments. And then he just sits up. And I'm not saying he needs to be the Undertaker, but he no-sells it to the point of really not believability. I love the Fiend character. Don't get me wrong. I love the Fiend character. It was one of the best inventions from Bray Wyatt's mind that WWE has had in 10 years. And the fact that he has really three gimmicks to go to with his Swamp Cult Leader and just Bray Wyatt, the Children's Funhouse host, is also really great. I mean, Bray Wyatt has really done an awesome job. But the Fiend character with the no-sell it's a little bit much. Kevin Owens is the latest victim. He hits a stunner that he no-sold, and it was kind of a cool ending. I liked it, but it also diminished the stunner that he used as a finish, and he gets choked out using the mandible claw, and the Fiend wins and then joins Alexa Bliss, who I'm really loving lately with her acting and joining the Fiend, and I'm wondering where that's going. But what did you think about this match and the finish and Alexa Bliss?
So, Matt, this might be maybe the first time ever I actually disagree with you. I love the no-selling, as long as it's not no-selling finishers left and right. If he no-sells moves left and right, I am perfectly fine with it. I think it makes him look more special. Every time I see him no-sell anything, I have a moment that makes me smile, and I don't know why. I don't know what it is specifically. I think it makes sense with this character because he's such a supernatural character. But again, he got hurt really bad with that botched jackhammer finish Goldberg match. Still to this day, I still feel like they need to have a rematch, and he has to destroy him to just make me kind of not get over that ever again. But I don't like when he no-sells finishers because I feel like a finisher should have impact, but when he no sells a punch or no sells a body slam or a you know, a suplex, that's fine because it just shows to everybody, okay, this guy is not normal. He's definitely special. And I don't feel like, because remember, when they're selling it, it's not like they're saying, oh, he doesn't have any feelings or when it comes to like, doesn't have any pain. Because when he does get hit, he's like, oh, the Fiend is down. Oh, he's back up. I think it's more like he suppresses the pain, and eventually, if he does lose, it kind of comes all out at once. I think that's kind of what it is. And I do like when he kicks out right after he loses a match, kind of right away, because it makes it seem a little stronger as well. So, you know, maybe the first thing I disagree with you, Matt. Holy crap, man. What's going on? That can't be happening.
It's bound to happen. That's fine. I'm glad. I see where you're coming from. I do understand that that's part of the character, but it's also the character itself is, look, the mask is the center of that character. The mask was so well done. It's a evil clown / American Horror Story, if anyone's into that kind of throwback mask. And apparently the mask was made by a movie, some kind of movie guy that did masks for horror movies. I can't put my finger on exactly who it was, but somebody who had done masks for horror movies, he actually, Bray Wyatt contacted this man. I wish I had the name, to get his mask done. It was done professionally. I mean, he didn't just go to like, you know, Spirit Halloween down the road and pick up a mask. I mean, it was really well done. And the mask really does help the character. You don't see the Fiend a lot.
Jason Barker from Palm Savini.
There you go. And I like the fact that he is a special character. You don't see him a lot. That's great. I don't want to see him a lot. And he's never had a match on SmackDown. That is true. And that is important that he didn't. But the no selling, look, he actually sold a clothesline more than he did the stunner, which he'd sold like completely, didn't sell it at all. I mean, he took the stunner and there was no laying there. Maybe he's out. It was just take the stunner. And, you know, I'm holding on to you with the mandible claw, which is a cool finish. But again, it does. It diminishes it. And, I mean, look back no further than exactly a year ago at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view with Seth Rollins, which I keep recalling. But to me, that was such a telling match with how WWE views this character, you know, that, hey, he could take anything. He took how many stomps? And so if you're talking about not liking the fact that he didn't sell a finisher, you couldn't have liked that match with Seth Rollins, no selling like, I don't know how many stomps, sledgehammers, chairs to the skull. I mean, it was a brutal match that I think, and I remember the fans booing the hell out of it because it did so much damage to the believability, the plausibility, the emotional investment was gone because it was like, this is child's play stuff. Like, not in terms of physicality, but in terms of like, hey, really? I mean, I'm watching, you know, like a child's show in terms of trying to believe what's actually happening. Like, this is just beyond anything anyone could get into.
It hurts Seth Rollins for sure,
big
man.
Time. I mean, Seth Rollins was already struggling as a babyface. He was weird on camera with Becky Lynch. Yeah, they have obviously a real life romance, but it didn't translate very well on camera. I never thought he fit a babyface role very well. He has that kind of like just annoyingly kind of just whiny voice just as a natural human being. Like, I mean, there's just the way he is. He's got a face that you kind of want to punch. And I mean that in the best way. Like, he has got a very unlikable face and voice. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean it in a way that is great for him to be a heel. And he's done that, and he always feels more natural as a heel. Kind of like Charlotte, who I think feels way more natural as a heel, too, when they try to turn her babyface. It's never comfortable. So, yeah, to me, I just call back that Hell in a Cell match from last year, and I'm like, ugh. And then ever since then, it's no sell, no sell, no sell, no sell. So, like, I don't know what the end game is for this. Like, is he just going to go undefeated forever? Does he have a kryptonite? Is there something, right?
Yeah, gotta, you know, something. Goldberg.
Oh, God, that's right, Goldberg. God, I have placed that out of my mind. I think I just...
Oh, I'm bringing it back. Don't you want... I know it's going to sound stupid, but, like, don't you want to see him fight again just so he can squash Goldberg in, like, 5 seconds? And then I would just be like, okay, thank you. Like, seriously.
A wrong needs to be righted, yes. The universe needs to go back in balance. That was awful. That was terrible. And I'd forgotten about that just because I watched that and I'm just like, that didn't just happen. Right. Like, they really, and that's where I don't like legacy stars coming back, really taking out very, very decisively taking out a rising star, one of the biggest, hottest acts, one of the most original acts that has come across WWE in a decade. And you just squash him with a guy that's going to be gone in a month. I mean, it just, it made no sense at all. And I think, you know, fans were there for that. So,
and Matt, and I don't need to plug my thing, but I think people were so pissed. I think I hit like 200,000 views on that one video.
Did you?
If people were pissed. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was a monster. That's one of my monsters out there.
Oh God. Well, hey, no, you're more than willing to, able to plug anytime you want.
Oh, this is your show, brother. No. I'm just happy to be here.
Well, guys, how about this? I'll give you a free plug now. Go check it out. I'm assuming the title is probably something along the lines of Goldberg Beats the Fiend or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I'll have to go back and take a look if you can talk for another 15 seconds.
Yeah, no. That's fine. So you go and search while I just rant about that. I mean, it was...
Yeah, Goldberg Beats the Fiend, fan rant.
There you go. Yeah, no, you do have those monster views out there, and I noticed that is one of them, so...
I do okay, man. Thanks, buddy.
No problem. So that's all I had for SmackDown. I know that there's some other things that happened in the draft, but is there anything else that you wanted to maybe touch on that we didn't?
Yeah, I just want to say a big thank you to you for having me on the show again. I absolutely love doing this with you. It's always a pleasure to be on. I can be on as much as you want, whenever you want, as long as my wife doesn't divorce me for it. And if I have enough time throughout my day to go do something. But honestly, it's always a blast. I think you're one of the more respectful and honestly one of the best podcast people I have ever worked with and honestly now ever doing collaborations with. And personally... I would love to have you not just on my show, but, you know, us working together in the future even more once in a while, because I think we have a really good chemistry together, and I love the work you do, buddy.
No, I really appreciate that. That was a hell of a promo to put me over. So I appreciate that. I mean,
I don't think Ricochet could probably do a better one, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm no superhero, but probably. I really do appreciate that. And, you know, it's always great to have you on because you added energy to the show that is very unique. I mean, I definitely enjoy especially your videos. I mean, some of your videos are just hilarious. Like, you'll start out very quiet and you'll like do various poses of you just kind of like staring at the TV. Then you just like explode on something. So
it really matters what I'm talking about. You know, if I'm in a happy mood, I'll just do like the nicest, put someone over like crazy. And then I see Keith Lee's entrance song. And then I just lose it.
You lost your mind. That was really funny. I mean, some of the, like, I end up laughing a lot of the time because the thing is like, what's great is in everyone listening, it's not an act. Like you're not in there trying to like pretend or like put on some kind of facade. Like you're just naturally reacting to what you're seeing, and it's just, that's what makes it great.
Yeah, and honestly, guys, like I've always like talked about like respect and positivity. I believe that positive networking is something we need to have more in this world. Good energy and everything like that, and. I feel like if you have a good vibe about yourself and you're respectful, like, yeah, I do botch videos and stuff like that where it's, you know, I laugh about mistakes and stuff like that. But like I do it in a comedy parody style, like a stand-up comedian. Like it's not anything like negative. It's just kind of making people laugh. You make people smile, you know, have some people have a good day or a bad day or whatever. Just make some like appreciate it. I think that's what you get a good vibe in this podcast as well, because you're very honest. You're very genuine about what your opinions are. And I think people really respect that.
No, that's exactly what we're going for. I mean, you know, you hear a lot of other podcasts, and look, I'm not putting down other podcasts because I listen to other wrestling podcasts. Like, I respect the whole wrestling community, and it's not like I'm competing with anybody. I think we're all just kind of one big family, but we really are, whether people think that or not. We all love wrestling, right? So, like, that's why we're here. You love wrestling because you have a YouTube channel doing it. I have a podcast that I love, and it's all about wrestling because I love it. So, yeah, I mean, I just try to be honest about things. I don't try to put on an act. I've always been honest. And like you said, making people laugh, making people feel good. And God dang, do we need that today? I mean, like with everything going on and look out, there's an election coming up and who the hell knows what the results of that are going to be and if it sparks more problems in the world. So it is an escape from your everyday stuff that whatever you're going through, work, relationships, whatever, that's what this is for, is to talk. It's really, as I call it, playing in the sandbox. Like we're talking about stuff that doesn't really matter, but it's a hell of a lot of fun to get into.
Oh, Ricochet not being able to cut a promo, that matters, man.
Well, that does matter. Maybe we should create a hashtag, like, instead of like BLM, we could create like Ricochet Matters and create like, you know, banners and stuff. Because
sounds like trouble.
That's a big time problem waiting to happen. But Ricochet, he was drafted in the third round, along with Jey Uso, Mandy Rose, and Dominik and Rey. He was drafted in the third round. He would be one of those guys in a real draft where he would be categorized under players to be named later. That's what he would be in. And I can't believe he's in the third round. He doesn't deserve to be in the 13th round, just based on what they've done with him. So
sorry, Matt. I know this is going long, but you know, it's not that I hate Ricochet. I think he's actually a pretty awesome, genuine guy everything I've heard. But he can't cut a promo. Turn him heel or give him a manager, for the love of God. He's so talented in the ring.
Agreed.
How much do you need to see out of him to know that he can't cut a promo? He's not getting better. It's been a year. Like, do something different.
I don't know. Maybe they'll just go with, he does his talking in the ring. Okay, maybe he just stops trying it all together and just does in-ring. Because that's what everyone looks at Ricochet for, is in-ring. Like, hey, 450 splash. Let's see how many cool reversals he can do. He's very WWE has centered his character around his athleticism. That's what you look at Ricochet for, is his athleticism, period. And they need to do something more. You're right.
Yeah.
But hey, this has been a blast. So everybody, listen, go check out the Botch Guy on YouTube. I've been plugging him for weeks. You guys know that. And if you haven't already, what are you doing? Go do it now. I trust me, you will be very glad that you did. It's totally free to do. So, and it will.
What?
Yeah, no, it is. Well, I've got a special promo code that I gave my listeners that. So, don't spread that around. And anybody who's listening, all my normal listeners, don't tell anybody else what we did. So check them out on YouTube. A lot of fun, authentic, and just a blast to watch. So, hey, like you said, we need to do this more often than just, you know, every 2 months, it seems like. Because the last time was SummerSlam, so this needs to happen again, for sure. Sometime
I'll see you tomorrow, man.
Yeah, okay, in the middle of my move. Let's
AEW Dark, man.
Yeah. No, like I said, I'm moving tomorrow. I'm going to be so exhausted by the end of the day, I'm not even going to know what my name is, so... All right. Well, hey, we'll be in touch, and you enjoy your evening.
Hey, you take care, Matt.
You too. Buddy.